Hey, everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Final hour, Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland, that's me, Willie Donick, and East Nashville. Chase McCabe will be with Floyd Reese today on the afternoon show. So it'll be Chase and the GM. That's coming up in an hour from now. You know, on Thursdays at 1 o'clock, we always enjoy our chats with our next guest, Elliot Freeman from Sportsnet. He now joins us. Elliot, how you doing?
Good, thanks. I'm just looking at something on Instagram, and it looks like Jeff Bezos has bought the naming rights to Seattle's NHL arena, and it will be called Climate Pledge Arena.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting.
Climate Pledge Arena.
Doesn't exactly roll off the tongue very well.
No, it's definitely different.
Huh. Very interesting. Are things heating up in your city when it comes to sports? What's your vibe right now?
You know, I got to tell you, it's kind of weird right now here, guys. Like, on the weekend, and I think we talked about it last week, it looked like Vancouver and Vegas were going to be the hubs for the NHL if play resumes.
Yep.
And then we reported this week there's been a snag with Vancouver. And now it doesn't look like the NHL is going there, and we're trying to figure out where the other hub's going to be. But I'm sure it's probably similar to you guys in the sense that we're looking at all of these positive tests. And, you know, you're wondering, like, and you're looking at where a lot of these cities are going in terms of the number of positive cases, and Texas is shutting down, and it's certainly a wow moment. And if they go back on July 10th, like, you know, you're trying to project, and you're talking about playing on July 30th, and maybe that gets delayed by a little bit, but if it does get delayed, it's not going to be much. I mean, it's interesting. Like, what was true yesterday isn't necessarily true today. And like, I got to tell you, like, it's weird times. It's really weird times. And it's hard not to look at all the positive tests right now and all the different sports and say, you know, hey, like, this is a challenge. This is a real challenge.
What are they saying? We'll come back to hockey. What are they saying now that baseball's fine? Well, they didn't agree on anything. They just were told they're going to play a 60-game season. What are they saying about the Blue Jays and how they're going to handle, you know, are they going to play in Toronto? How is there any word right now on that front?
I don't expect that our government is going to make too many crazy accommodations.
Oh, okay.
Basically in hockey, there's still, even if you come across the border, what they're talking about is you still have to do a quarantine. Now they're going to add the rink to it, so you can do your quarantine between wherever you're living and the rink. I can tell you this. When the news got out yesterday that Major League Baseball had asked for that exemption, or the Jays had asked for that exemption for teams to play here, it wasn't received very highly.
Huh.
Like, one of the reasons that Vancouver is talking about is going to be out is that they have the NHL and all these other leagues have said one positive test won't derail the season. Like, we're not shutting down on one positive test. I don't think the province of British Columbia agrees with that. I think their threshold is very low. And the other thing, too, is I'm not sure if all the staff, like the hotel staff and the other staff, are going to be part of the hubs. And I think in BC, they're looking at it like, well, what happens if a member of the hub, a member of the staff leaves the hub and they take COVID out into the community? You know, BC's done a really good job of controlling it. So I don't think they like that. And so I think a lot of people, like we love our sports. We want to see sports. But I think there's a limit to how much, you know, we're saying, okay, does that mean there's going to be a lot of connectivity with the general public? Because I don't think people here want that.
Where are you on? Are you guys in phases? Where are you, like businesses? We know, how is that working? Restaurants, everything working in Canada right now. How much quarantine is still going on? How is it working right now? Let's just start with where you are in Toronto.
Well, in Toronto, we were late to, like, a lot of the province went to phase two before we did. We were one of the last to get to. I mean, we're the biggest metropolis in the country. What's called the Golden Horseshoe, which is kind of the area around Toronto. Depending on what figures you look at, there's, you know, 10 million people there in a country of 30 million. So it's the biggest population hub. Our area was the last to get to phase two, and I live right in Toronto, in the north end of the city. And our, like, barber shops just reopened 2 days ago. Yesterday.
Okay.
And now patios and stuff have opened today. Like, you could do takeout, and there were some people who were kind of violating it a bit, but in terms of legally being able to open for patios and restaurants and barber shops and stuff, that was yesterday.
Okay, so economics, and I know we're a sports show, but you just said it. You're a massive city. If things are just reopening or just opening up, how greatly has that affected, you know, people who have businesses in Toronto?
Oh, it's I'm sure it's no different than Nashville in the sense that nobody's getting out of this unscathed, right?
Yeah.
Like, everybody's being affected, whether you're an employer or you're an employee, big business, small business, nobody's getting out of this unscathed.
Yeah.
And, you know, I really feel badly for especially small business owners, people who invested in a small business owner recently, closer to the start of the pandemic, they've been crushed. And it's really unfortunate. And you know, the other thing too is that we've got, you know, you guys have had in the States some payments to people like that. We've had it too. And then when this is over, we're going to have to pay for all this, right? So
right.
I think we're all still waiting to see what the future is going to be.
Sure. So just so I got this straight, so did you say, Elliot, that they're willing to let, if, let's say, for the sake of this discussion, that it's Toronto. The other hub is in Canada, but we'll just say it's Toronto. They're willing to let it's not come up 14 days in advance. They're willing to let the clock start. Then they could, in other words, there doesn't have to be extra time for quarantine?
No, I think what they're talking about here is if you come up and you have to do a 14-day quarantine, it could be at the
bubble,
hotel and the rink.
Okay, the bubble, so to speak.
Or I know there were some talks about maybe a shorter-term quarantine with a lot of testing, but I don't know if that's been approved.
So that's
but
the hang-up.
The way it stands right now is if you come into Canada by air, you've got to do a 14-day quarantine, and for the general public, it's been at the home, and now what they're talking about is can you do it at the rink and the home?
Okay. So that's the rub with baseball. That's why you said it's more of like an exemption, because obviously they're not coming there for 2 weeks, so they're kind of hosed on Toronto having the Blue Jays having home games because nobody's going to be able to come in and comply with those rules, correct? I mean, that's the difference on the baseball side. Interesting. Huh. So do you think today it's going to be your city? Or do you think that, is Edmonton out, in your opinion?
No, like I think guys, like I think the NHL was planning on announcing its hub cities today. And then, so on Tuesday, all of a sudden there's this issue they weren't expecting with Vancouver. And I think it's kind of thrown the whole thing into a bit of chaos. So I still think they'd like it to be Toronto or Edmonton, but I just don't think they know. Like, basically, this was about done, and it fell apart. It's like you're in a 100-meter hurdle, and you trip over the last hurdle with the lead, right? So then it becomes a scramble. So from what I've heard about Vancouver is it's most likely out, but that's not 100%, but it's most likely out. And now they're trying to see if Toronto or Edmonton is a better option. I would say Toronto's the first choice and Edmonton's the second. But again, you may not get the choice you want.
Elliot Friedman is with us. So, Elliot, with that in mind, just out of curiosity, would the West be in Toronto, in the East be in Vegas, or are they okay with the quote-unquote host team being in their home city?
I have a feeling that I think it's going to be East in the East and West in the West, but again, I could always be proven wrong about that. I know that one of the things they were worried about was players being at home, worried that they would try to visit their families outside the bubble, and that was one of the concerns they had. But someone told me this week they thought if it ends up being an East and a West again instead of two West, the East teams might end up in the East. But again, I'm so careful about this stuff because it almost seems to change on a daily basis.
Yeah, there's no question. You know, I've gone through stretches where, you know, a couple of months ago, I was like, how are they ever going to be able to pull this off? Then maybe as late as last week, I was like, hey, this is going. I feel good about it. And then, as you mentioned, you know, with the cases rising around, maybe you're not 100% sure you can pull this off even at this stage. But it's interesting. Elliot, we've talked about this in comparison to the baseball or even NFL. The idea of the bubble that basketball and hockey are doing seems like it will make it easier to pull off than a baseball that is trying to do travel, and I guess when you're home, you can go home.
Yeah, but I don't think that's going to be the case in the NHL. I think that once this starts, you're not going to be able to go anywhere. I think I've heard the bubble's right. Going to be really tight. I think the bubble is going to be extremely tight. And I think that there was some pushback against that, guys, for a while. But now that we've seen what's kind of been going on the last week, I don't think people are pushing back against that anymore.
Yeah, I think it gives you a much better chance of executing this for sure. Elliot, let's ask about the Hall of Fame.
And I got to tell you guys too. Like, I think that there are people in whether they work for the league or the Players Association who kind of want the players in the bubble because they think it gives them a better chance. I've talked to people who think that, you know, once they get guys into the bubble, they think they've got a real chance to make it work because the people will be isolated. They'll be with each other. I mean, your question is how many positive cases come with you. That's the thing you worry about. But they really believe if they can be in a situation where they can get people who are negative into the bubble, they're going to be okay. And now we'll wait and see.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So let's talk Hall of Fame for a minute here. Yep. It's interesting as the Predators have more and more history with each passing year. There's more guys that get to the Hall of Fame that have a history against the Predators. Two guys in particular certainly had big moments against them, Jagrome Iginla and Marian Hossa. I think we could all Predator fans have this nightmare. Marian Hossa comes out of the penalty box after taking a major penalty in that game five in a game that, as Blackhawk fans look back, it's one of the more pivotal games in their recent history, right? They just started getting good again. Nashville had them beat on the power play up one in the final minute in game five. They win in Chicago. They would come home to Nashville up 3-2 in that first round of 2010. And we know what happened. Hossa you know, after Kane ties it with the shorthanded goal, Holsa comes out of the penalty box and wins it in overtime. Just a gut-wrenching loss for the Predators, but what a great player.
Oh, my goodness. He was a great player. Like, I know some people really freak out about Hall of Fame selections. I'm not one of those people. I mean, the world is, like, basically burning right now, and a bunch of people just had a great day to go to the Hall of Fame, and I'm happy for them. I got no problem with anybody who was selected. Hossa was a great player. Like, to me, like, it's like in life, guys. Like, there's some people who are leaders, and there's some people who are followers, and there's some people who are kind of in the middle, and that's all okay. Like, we can't have everybody being one of those things, or else things wouldn't work. But, like, I looked at Hossa as like the best B-plus player. Like, I don't think, like, I think if he was your number one guy, I just don't think he was built to be your number one guy in terms of personality. But if you had, like, one of those guys on your team and you had Hossa with him, holy cow, was he going to be dynamite. And you look at that Chicago team, like, we knew who the A guys were. They were Kane, and they were Taves, and they were Keith. And then you put Hossa as sort of like their cornerstone support, and he was going to thrive. And you just talked about it. Like, you saw it there up front. Those other guys could do the leading, and he could just be Marian Hossa. And Marian Hossa, when he was just being Marian Hossa, he was pretty damn good.
Yeah, that is an interesting thought of how, just like we have all the time with baseball, how low do you drop the line? These are all great players, but where do you draw the line, Hall of Fame and not? Jerome Iginla, I guess there was pretty much no doubt with him, and his numbers alone against the Predators, even I remember when he got picked up by the L.A. Kings a couple of years ago, mm-hmm. right at the end, he still was scoring big goals against the Predators wherever he went. But that guy, no question about it. And it's interesting, his career pretty much spans the existence of the Predators. As he was coming in, that's when the Predators came into the league. So we've watched him from the start.
And if someone sent out a tweet the other day, I didn't, like, see who it was, but they sent out a tweet, like, if you look at his time in Calgary, the number of games he played there and his stats, and who was second in terms of gameplay, goals, assists, and points, like, you needed a telescope to see the difference. He had some good players around there. They did go to one Stanley Cup final, but in terms of carrying the mail offensively, you know, he was enormous. He was the franchise. And the other thing people up in Canada will always remember is that, and maybe people in the States too, you know, Canada's two victories for the gold over the U.S. in the Olympics, and both those gold medal games, he had huge games. He had two goals in 2002, and he, of course, had the assist on Sidney Crosby's winner in 2010. So I think, like, you know, there's a lot of hockey fans up here. Maybe he didn't win a Stanley Cup, but on a huge stage, he was big time in two important games.
Boy, no question. That's bringing back bitter memories for the fans of Team USA. That's okay. You know, so also give us a little background on Kevin Lowe, because that's a guy that goes back a little bit before the Predators' existence. So maybe some of our younger listeners may not be familiar with him.
Well, if there was anybody yesterday who's named to the Hall of Fame got some negative publicity, it was probably Kevin Lowe. And I think that's really wrong, and I think it's really unfair. And people who say it against him say that, well, like, you know, he was the eighth best player on those great Oilers teams. Well, those Oilers teams won five Stanley Cups in 7 years. And the reason they did that was because, as my partner Jeff Merrick said, they had a traveling all-star team. And maybe he was their seventh or eighth best player, but that doesn't mean he also wasn't a Hall of Famer. The reason they won that much is because they had seven or eight Hall of Famers. I think he's the eighth one from that team. And, you know, he was a guy, he was talented. Like, people forget, like, he scored the first goal in Edmonton Oilers history. But, you know, there were so many other players getting all the numbers that he didn't have great numbers, but that doesn't mean he wasn't a great player. He was a good, he was a great defenseman, like, super competitive guy. Like, so later on after he retired, he coached the Oilers, and then he was their general manager and president. And when he coached, like, the guys who played for him told me that he took the losses 50 times harder than the players did. And there were some guys who really cared. Like, he was a really competitive guy, big part of their leadership group. He won another Stanley Cup, his sixth, as a member of the Rangers in 94. And there are guys who said that they don't win that cup without the effort that he had and what he did there. And he wasn't, he was more of a defensive defenseman because there were a lot of other offensive players, but he was a tremendously skilled guy, and he absolutely could not stand to lose. He absolutely hated losing, and that was big with him.
See, that's a really interesting case that had to be made, I'm sure, and it's probably like the NFL Hall of Fame when you're trying to, you know, quantify the value of an offensive guard or an offensive tackle. Because, like with Kevin Lowe, he wasn't supposed to be scoring all the goals. They had all these guys scoring all those goals for that team. Six Stanley Cups speaks for itself for sure, but I'm sure with the lack of stats to back it up, especially back then, no analytics to speak of, how you tried to quantify just how great of a defensive defenseman he was beyond the intangibles that you're talking about.
Well, you know who we would probably, I could probably compare him a little bit to, and I don't know if they're exactly the same player, but more of the way they're perceived. Like, you guys have a guy there in Nashville in Ekholm, right? And so when you guys go to the Stanley Cup final, obviously PK gets a lot of attention. And obviously Yossi gets a lot of attention. And when you add Suter and Weber there, they got a lot of attention. But there are all, and Ryan Ellis gets a lot of attention. But, you know, everybody knows what a great player Ekholm is. Maybe he doesn't get a ton of points, but everybody knows how good he is and how what an important role he plays. And if I was making a comparison to the Predators, that's the comparison I would make. He's probably similar to Ekholm in the sense that your smart fan and your Predators fan knows how important he is, but maybe around the league he doesn't get as much attention because you've got other names who get the exposure in Nashville as opposed to he does. When you've got, you know, Roman Yossi carrying the puck up the ice all the time, we're all looking at him instead of Ekholm.
It's a really good point. That's a good example. Leave us with this quickly. I saw your list for potential the next head coach for New Jersey. Who would you assess as the leading candidate, in your opinion, right now today?
Well, I think it's a tough one to answer, guys, because, like, so the guys they've interviewed were the current head coach, who's the interim guy, Alain Nasruddin. And the other names were John Stevens, who's an assistant in Dallas, Peter Laviolette, who you guys know really well, Gerard Gallant, who was in Vegas, and Lindy Ruff, who's now an assistant with the Rangers. And, you know, Tom Fitzgerald, who's the current GM, he interviewed all those guys, and I think he was getting close to making a hire. But the other thing the Devils have been doing is they've been interviewing some people for the GM job. They haven't officially said that it's going to be. They haven't officially said that it's going to be Fitzgerald's job for good. So I think the other guys they've interviewed have said, you can't do that. You have to let us have a say on the new head coach. So I think that's on a bit of a stall. Okay. Now, if Fitzgerald becomes the GM, it's going to be one of those guys. But if Fitzgerald doesn't become the GM, I think all bets are off. But I think Laviolette's got a shot. Like, I think he legitimately has a shot to be the coach there.
Interesting. You just had Ryan Kesler on your podcast. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, let him know that Nashville still doesn't like him. Just,
you know, I asked him, of you and Ryan Johansson, like, is that over? Is that still going on? And Kesler, as only Kesler can do, and he's in a much better mood generally now, but he kind of sneered at me, and he goes, yeah, that's still not over.
Yeah, not surprised, not surprised. Always enjoy the visit. Continue to be safe. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, you guys take care. Be great.
All right, Elliot Friedman, Sportsnet. No love loss between Ryan Kesler and anybody, including Ryan Johansson. Nothing's changed. Nothing. I'm glad his answer was that, because nothing's changed here. All right, we will come back. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase on the other side. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Have you owned or managed a small business? You're open? You want to let people know about it? We've got Free Business Friday. That's tomorrow. Right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Well, we're going to offer you free advertising. Yeah, when you hear that word, free advertising to any local business that's safely open and working. That's a no-cost, no-catch offer to you. Visit thegamenashville.com/FBF. That's The Game Nashville /FBF for more information. Blah. Free Business Friday is our way of supporting small businesses as we get through this together. It's been a lot of fun doing that on Fridays. As Elliot Friedman started off with us, Amazon, you know, their owner, who's worth, I don't know, I think he can buy half the world, I'm pretty sure. They have the name of their new arena in Seattle, Climate Pledge Arena. What a weird name. Climate
Not
Pledge
fun
Arena?
For the announcers. That's my first thought.
But
not fun for the announcers to say.
What is
Key
it?
Key Arena Climate, sounded a lot easier to say.
Key Arena was a lot easier. But what the heck is Climate Pledge? Do we know?
Well, that's the whole idea, I guess, is for us to find out.
That's why he wants to bring attention to Climate Pledge. What the heck?
Climate Pledge. Help fight climate change. Worldwildlife.org. I guess that's the, Amazon Sustainability. The Climate Pledge.
Okay.
I guess this is a big cause backed by Amazon.
Okay. Well, that would make sense. Honestly, what was that dude worth? What was he worth? Like $500
it's
billion?
It's growing by the day. It's already.
Is he worth a trillion?
Ridiculous.
What's he worth?
And I'm almost like, can somebody come up with some other way that we can get stuff, you know, besides Amazon's? Like, this guy doesn't need any more. Like, I hope he at least considers paying his employees more. I mean, what the heck? How much money do you need?
He can do whatever.
At least have your workers get paid well.
He wants to do whatever he wants to do. So Climate Pledge Arena.
Okay. A commitment.
Be the first.
This is what it is. The Climate Pledge is a commitment to meet the Paris Agreement 10 years early. It calls on signatories to be net zero carbon across their businesses by 2040, a decade ahead of the Paris Agreement goal of 2050.
Yeah, so I was reading.
It's founded by Amazon Global Optimism. So there's a connection with Amazon. So They put the name on the arena.
It will be the first net zero carbon certified arena in the world, which will generate zero waste from operations and events. We'll use reclaimed rainwater, which is what our Music City Center does, right? Our convention center. It uses the rainwater in the ice system to create the greenest ice in the NHL.
Huh. So it's they're getting a return on their investment because the two of us dough heads, as Crispy likes to say, we're learning about the Climate Pledge for the first time. I mean, I knew about climate change, but here we go.
So the reclaimed rainwater is going to be used in the ice system to create the ice for the arena. Do they get rain in Seattle? We get enough rain.
They get
a little bit
of rain last I checked. I've never been there, but I hear that they do.
Huh. Okay. So it rains in Seattle?
And, as you might expect, their baseball park has a retractable roof because of it.
Yeah,
to bring something back that you brought up earlier in the show.
Pretty smart. I'll tell you what. Something that is interesting to me that we got into a bunch of things. By the way, Gary Bettman, the drawing is going to for the draft lottery is going to be, when is it going to be? Friday, is that right?
Friday night at 7:00 Central Time, taking place on the NHL Network, and it's actually going to be taking place in the studios there. Catherine Tappan will be hosting it, half-hour show with the commish and Bill Daly. I guess picking out the ping pong balls or however they do it.
By the way, quickly, side note, just saw this. In February, the Wilpons, let me just start there. Do you like them as the ownership group for the Mets?
Not really. No.
Do you know that they got an offer in February to buy the Mets that they turned down?
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember what the offer was?
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't remember exactly the offer, but I remember it fell through.
$2.6 billion. $2.6 billion to buy the Mets. And 4 months later, They won't. They'll be lucky to even sell it now. I would say probably they won't be able to. They won't.
They'll be able to sell it.
You think in these times?
Eventually, yes.
Eventually, well, yeah.
I look forward. I look forward for the day that the Wilpons are out.
Right. I'm saying though, they've. It's pretty clear they've messed up. I mean, they should have taken the $2.6 billion. And ran.
I don't think that was, if I remember correctly, that wasn't the issue. It wasn't they just turned it down. Something happened on the buyer's end, I think, that screwed it up.
What I was reading said that they turned it down.
Really?
Yeah.
That would be very Wilpon.
They said that they turned it down. They turned down the $2.6 billion offer to sell the Mets.
Mets gonna Mets.
Oh. Anyway, getting back to the hockey
typical
side.
Typical Mets.
I know. I knew your answer. I just wanted to hear it out loud. Yeah, they're not very good owners. What's interesting to me is I wonder how these players, as we get a little bit closer, and this is – we're just happen to be talking about hockey. I think we're starting to see it on the NBA side too because the Lakers have lost a pretty good player because of this, that as we get a little bit closer to this and the reality sets in, how I wonder some of these players are dealing with it. Are they becoming nervous? Like at one point, I'm sure you're anxious, right? You're just like, come on, let's get on with it. Let's get going. And now that reality is set in that, okay, and it's not fully there yet because they still got to name these hub cities and then you start making plans, but things are coming together. There's activities now, team So I wonder how many of these players are starting to get really concerned.
I just saw a series of quotes from Carey Price. Now think about Carey Price,
okay.
Right? One of the best goalies of his time, maybe the best goalie of his time. His team is you know, barely in, they're in, they weren't going to be in, you know, they were going to play out the string. We talked to Shea Weber about this, right? So if there's anybody that would be sitting there going, why bother, right? And I'm sure every Canadian media is going to ask every Montreal player, hey, is this really worth it, right? They're all going to get that question, especially in the position that their team is in. But Carey Price said, I want to play for the Stanley Cup. And he says, I know people who have had family members that have, you know, died from this. You know, but he still said he wanted to play. Elliot said something important, I think, that resonated with me. The key is going to be, can they get everybody into the bubble with the negative test? If they can get started and stay in the bubble, you feel like your chances are pretty good, right? But getting from where we are today to that point may not be very easy because there's going to be more positive tests as people are coming from literally all around the world to all these different cities. They've been with different people, different volumes of people. You know, some have probably been more disciplined than others at doing the right things. That's the key to me. That sort of had the light bulb go off for me. If they can get started, and I think the same would apply to the NBA. If they can get everybody in there and start off on the right foot where they tested everybody and they feel confident when they start that the virus isn't in there, then odds are pretty good that they can finish. Baseball has got a different pattern here, right? With the travel. I don't know how they're going to pull it off. All the moving around and all the cases that are going on right now in the various places, there's so many more potential pitfalls there. Would you agree?
Yep. There's no doubt. I think Elliot basically referred to that in our interview with him, that you know the biggest problem they're going to have is just trying to get it cranked up. Like you feel pretty good if you're in a kind of, I guess we're going to call it a bubble, a more controlled environment than what football is going to have and baseball is going to have. The NBA and the NHL are going to have controlled environments for the most part. If you can just get up and get going, then, you know, you feel pretty good about being able to pull this off. The hardest part is as everybody starts to gather, and they're coming from all over the, in hockey's case especially, all over the world, do you have the ability, you know, how much, once you start gathering and then the testing, how's that going to look? You know, and then if you've got to start shutting these people down, are you able to get everybody going at the same time? And that's going to be their biggest hurdle. Because once they get in there, you kind of feel like the way they're monitored. And the other thing that stood out to me is Elliot saying, hey, this thing is going to be small. These are going to be small groups. Did you notice how he emphasized how, hey, you're not going to be able to bring much, these teams?
Yeah, they're going to keep it tight. And he said it was going to be very strict as well. That makes a lot of sense. And I think they have a chance if they can get started. I think that's the important thing. Here's another thing that came up, Darren, that it caught my attention. When you asked about the Blue Jays, he seemed a little concerned as to whether the Blue Jays would be able to play in their stadium if they can get started. So the question becomes, where would the Blue Jays play if they can't play in Toronto? Would they play in Yankee Stadium? Would they play in, you know, City Field and just stay in New York the whole time? Like, would they just be in their own little bubble?
Would they play in Buffalo?
Well, I mean, I don't know.
I mean, I'm just throwing something
out
there.
I would think they would just stay in a city where, you know, there are other games being played. Like, if you're in New York, you're going to play you would be playing a lot of games in New York anyway. So if you played your home games there,
you're going to play the Yankees a lot.
For the majority of the time. You play the Yankees a lot. I think they might even play the Mets a few times. That might be, you play the Red Sox a lot, so that's even closer. But that's something that Major League Baseball is going to have a plan for.
Well, he had the hesitation because he wasn't sure whether the Blue Jays are going to get granted permission from their government to.
Well, remember what the rule is in Canada. You have to go in and quarantine. If you come in, you have to quarantine for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And so that's impractical for, you know, you got a four-game series with the Red Sox, and then here comes the Yankees for four games. You can't sit there and quarantine for 2 weeks. But those teams have to get off the plane and go play. So that would disqualify Toronto from hosting if that rule was in place.
Right. He didn't seem confident, at least the way I took it, that the Blue Jays would get clearance to do that. Basically a special exemption.
Right, because you would be asking for a special favor from the government, and I think there will probably be at least some who think, you know, who are we kidding? What's more important, the Blue Jays being able to play in Toronto in front of no fans?
Right.
Or the overall health, you know, keeping the health protocols that we have that we think are working well intact?
But here is a problem, though, I'm sure they're discussing. Well, do we know for a fact that the whole baseball season will be without fans?
We do not know.
Right. So, you know, the Blue Jays are going, well, what if we're allowed to start having fans, 25% capacity or what have you? So we're going to let that go to fill-in-the-blank stadium instead?
Yeah, I guess the Blue Jays would have to.
I don't even know how
say,
you do
well,
that.
Well, as long as we get the money, do we get the money from that? As long as we get the gate, you know, I don't know how that works, but yeah, that's a fair question.
But why would anybody, you know, if they're playing, let's just go with New York City. If they're playing, you know, in New York City, and it's the Blue Jays and the Orioles, who in New York City is going to that game? I mean, you have to be like a diehard baseball fan.
You probably would have tickets available. Probably would be tickets available.
Yeah, I would say sections available. They would name the section after you if you buy a ticket.
Well, there would be sections available even in a capacity crowd, because if you could only have 25% capacity, that would still leave empty sections. But the funny part would be, you know, you have 25% and you're, what, 5%? for that game on a Tuesday afternoon.
Boy, you'd be lucky to get 5%.
And it's the Orioles, and but you know, this is how we're going to have to roll this year. There's going to be some of that.
I thought that was interesting. Did you catch Adam Neuse talking about? Well, I don't know if he specifically said Ticketmaster or Ticketron. However, they get their get the tickets. Did you hear how if you like punch in like a seat or whatever, it automatically social distance around you? Basically, yes. I guess it would X out the board.
I'm sure Ticketmaster's doing that with all of the venues in anticipation of this kind of thing. That if we have to go with this system for a while, how do you? Let's say you're with your. Let's just say you take Lauren and Maddox, right? You three are there. You guys should be okay to sit together, right? You live together.
Right.
So you can sit together. But then you have to put the 6 feet around all of you. So that's a complicated thing. So I guess there's software being developed to try to work that out. So people can sit together who live together, but everybody else has to space out. And how many people can you get in there? Because that's the key. Everybody wants to know how many tickets can we sell safely?
Yep. Pretty interesting. An NBA legend is hanging it up, and also a big event, another big event has canceled for 2020 in our area, surrounding area. We'll tell you what we're talking about to close up shop on Thursday's edition of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Well, Bonnaroo was supposed to have already taken place. They had rescheduled it and moved it to September. And now they have just said, you know what, 2020, they're just going to go on and push it to 2021. So it looks like they will celebrate their 20-year anniversary. Hard to believe it's been 20 years.
Wow.
At Bonnaroo, but that is going to happen next June. So June 17th through the 20th, 2021 is when they will celebrate their 20-year history. So it is not going to happen this season. So I wanted to pass that along. And also, the legendary player Vince Carter is hanging up his shoes. He's not wearing cleats. His basketball shoes. And I know that makes Marquise sniffle. But
it does.
An unbelievable career is coming to an end.
I will watch his dunk contest with candles lit.
Yeah.
In tribute to Vince Carter. Vince Carter's great. He's at least top five favorite player for me of all time. And his dunks are amazing.
Top five. He played 22 years.
You know how many teams?
Man, that's unbelievable.
You know how many teams?
It's a lot.
Eight teams.
Eight?
I was almost thinking double digits.
But I was thinking more than that.
I'm surprised it's only eight, yeah. I might have guessed higher.
Eight teams.
Who was his longest stint with?
It's a mixture between the Raptors and the Nets.
It wasn't the Grizzlies?
No, definitely was not the Grizzlies, nor the Phoenix Suns, which is like the most shocking one out of all of them. He spent like one season with the Suns and one season with the Magic.
Wow. What a career. Fifth pick overall.
What year?
Fifth pick overall. 1998.
Wow.
When the Bulls were winning their sixth title, he was getting drafted fifth overall by? Anybody remember who he was selected by originally?
The Golden State Warriors.
Yeah, the Golden State Warriors.
Did he ever play for them?
Nope.
Oh, got traded on draft night.
On draft day? I was going to say that. So he started his career with the Raptors, is that right? Or the Nets?
No, with the Raptors. Isn't it amazing how many draft day trades are made in the NBA? Like guys getting.
Oh, there's. Yeah,
you can't. Isn't it amazing?
Even...
Yeah, by the way, take that hat off. You're not going to be playing for that team.
And that happens all the time. All the time.
Do you know who else was in that draft class?
In 98?
Hall of Famers. Future Hall of Famers.
98.
Mm-hmm.
Two other Hall of Famers?
Two I know for sure is going to be in the Hall of Fame. There is one that's questionable, but I'm not going to give you that one. But
There's
two for sure Hall of Famers.
Michael Olowokandi was drafted number one overall that year. I remember he was. Is he not in the Hall of Fame?
No, he's definitely not getting in.
No,
no.
Hall
he's
of Shame.
Keith Van Horn.
Hall of Shame.
Keith Van
That's
Horn
right,
up there.
Hall.
No, definitely not. Dirk Nowitzki and Paul Pierce was also in that draft.
Oh, okay.
Paul Pierce. Yeah, I actually announced the game in Hawaii, Vanderbilt versus Kansas, with Paul Pierce. That was pretty awesome to see him. It ended up being a great game.
And you remember?
Was Keith Van Horn in there?
Yeah, no, I don't think he is. No, I don't think he was. Let me see. I have to look again. But
98 was the year that Tubby Smith and Kentucky beat Keith
Utah.
Van Horn and Utah in the finals.
I don't think Van Horn came out that year.
He wouldn't have come out that year? Did he?
I don't think
He played the next year?
Yeah, I think so. Do you know who else was in that draft?
Well,
in the first round?
Vancouver drafted Mike Bibby in that draft.
Mike Bibby, I was going to say him. They had a great year. Who was the point guard for Utah? Andre played for a long time in the NBA, for the Jazz for a long time.
Point guard or?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, you're talking about Andre Kirilenko.
No.
Are you talking about? No.
I was like, he's a
Turner?
University.
Who was that?
Point guard. Are you talking not Andre Miller?
No.
Andre Miller is who
Andre
I'm
Miller, that's it. Yes.
Okay.
Andre Miller.
Yeah. So he wasn't drafted that year?
No, he wasn't.
He was on
that
Utah team.
Those guys were not cut. They didn't come out that year. No, but
so Bibby second overall. Rafe LaFrance. How about that? Third overall pick.
How about that year in the first round, 16th pick overall, Bryce Drew. From Valparaiso.
Bryce Drew.
Think about that.
Nice.
Bryce Drew went six
Drew.
Picks after Paul Pierce. Wow.
And Bryce Drew played a long time in the league.
This is unbelievable.
Wow. This is a list of who's in this draft. Rashard Lewis also got drafted
And I'll tell you what, as you just mentioned, the best player of the whole thing was Dirk Nowitzki, and nobody knew who he was at the time.
Nope. Ninth overall. Same deal. He wasn't originally. Who drafted him originally? Same deal. Wasn't it the Bucks?
Yep.
Yeah, the Bucks.
Imagine being
Antoine Jameson and Vince Carter back to back with the fourth and the fifth picks. Robert Tractor Trailer from Michigan for Dallas, and then Jason Williams from Florida. You talk about a guy that was, a comet shooting through the sky. That guy was fun to watch. Remember Billy Donovan had him in Florida for a while?
No doubt.
And had the greatest nickname ever.
No doubt. All right, that is going to do it for us, but we need to wish somebody happy birthday. The guy
who's
coming up
next. He's about
to
take the microphone, I believe.
Yeah. I don't know if his co-host will sing happy birthday to him. We're not going to. But one Chase McAbabe, it's his birthday. What is did he get to 30 yet? Is he at 30? Or is he 25? How old is he? 35? How old is Chase? 33? I think he's 33.
We'll go with the youngest age you can think of, just
47?
Just for his sanity.
47? No, I don't think so. Happy birthday, Chase. Got to work on your birthday.
Stay tuned to reveal how old Chase is when he takes the microphone. Maybe he'll tell us.
That is going to do it for our show today. Enjoy the great weather. Have a great rest of your day. Be safe. I want you back with us tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. to close out the week. We'll see you then.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.